Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
It's really interesting being roommates with your mother as an adult. You know, I had just turned 30, I think, when I left after 9 months of like working with her on this cookbook. And I felt a real shift. I was like, wow, our relationship is different now because we're spending time with her, just the day to day of it, and like seeing her wins or maybe if she was having a good day or a bad day. We've established different kinds of rules and boundaries. And I think that's lovely. It's like constantly evolving and something I'm in the process with.
Welcome to Your Mama's Kitchen, the podcast where we explore how the food and culinary traditions of our youth shape who we become as adults. I'm Michelle Norris. My guest today is Eric Kim. He skyrocketed to food writing fame and acclaim at the Food Network and Food 52. Eric is now a staff writer and essayist for the New York Times food section. His recent cookbook is called Korean American, Food That Tastes Like Home. It's a luscious book, and we had it with us in studio as we talked so we could swoon over how beautiful it was together. The photos alone will knock you out, and each chapter reads almost like memoir. It's not surprising that this book became an instant New York Times bestseller. Eric dedicated the book to his mother, Jean, and the food he grew up with. He was raised in suburban Atlanta, eating a combination of Southern food and traditional Korean staples like savory kimchi and delicately fried fish for Sunday supper. Now, remember the subtitle for his book, Food That Tastes Like Home? Well, the recipes in the book were actually developed when Eric was home in his mama's kitchen. During the pandemic, Eric left New York City and returned to Atlanta, living with his family and cooking right next to his mother, Jean. Now, to some of us, that might sound, shall we say, challenging, working with your mother day in and day out in her space while trying to produce your masterpiece. But for Eric Kim, the famous food writer, it was a productive time. And for Eric Kim, the son, it was a healing experience. Even in the closest families, recognizing boundaries can be difficult. And it's not just about space or the geography of a house. Kids want autonomy, parents want to exercise authority, and those two things usually collide. Today, we hear how Eric learned how to break free of his parents' expectations and chart his own path, including a stint where he ran away from home in the family car to go to Nashville. We'll learn how he developed a greater respect for his mother's kitchen skills when he became a food writer, and how his journey brought him back to Jean's kitchen and all of her refrigerators filled to the brim with jars and jars of delicious kimchi. So, hey, Eric Kim, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor, truly.
Well, I am so excited because your latest cookbook fell into my hands, and I have been wanting to talk to you about your story in part because it's just such a beautiful book, and I love many of the recipes. And you grabbed me with the introduction, which, of course, is all about your mom.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
So, you know the deal. This is a podcast that always begins with a simple question. Mm. Tell me about your mama's kitchen. Take me inside her space. Close your eyes. Describe what the kitchen of your youth looked like, smelled like. Put me inside that space.
Wow. I didn't think to do this before the interview, and now I'm like closing my eyes and thinking about it. So I would say we moved a few times, not that many times, but every time we moved, as you know, when I was little, it would be 10 minutes down the block or something. And then eventually it was like 10 minutes closer to my dad's office. And anyway, we were always quite in the same area, which meant all the houses kind of looked the same for the most part. Each house, the garage is always next to the kitchen, or the garage even opens into the kitchen always, which meant the garage was also used as a, I don't know, like a little refrigerator in the winter. Lots of like jars and things like that. So her kitchen kind of starts outside of the kitchen, you know, where the garage door is. That's a very like suburban Georgia, but I mean, maybe suburban American like house design. And then you go in and, you know, I don't know how, but every single house, like three or four houses, it's always just the same kitchen island. There's like a big kitchen island. So I really value kitchen islands because I think that's where like a lot of the cooking happens. And in one of the kitchens, the stove was at the kitchen island, which I thought was kind of amazing, at the center of the kitchen versus to the side, you know. But each kitchen kind of created the same sort of environment where everyone's always, it's like a cheesy image that every food writer gives, but you know, everyone does hang around the kitchen. That's where the food is. So we barely used our dining room or our dining tables. We were always in the kitchen.
Does your mom, you call her Jean, by the way. Which is interesting because and you grew up in the South, and in the South people don't call their mother by their first name. So yeah, yeah. What's that about?
To be clear, I don't call her Jean to her face. It was sort of a narrative device that I decided early on when I was writing about her for the first time, you know, not even in the book, just in my stories at Food 52 or Food Network. She was really just fleshed out as a character, you know, because she's so dynamic and interesting and fun, and she's a big character. And I think I wanted people ultimately to get to know her individually, not just as a mom or an immigrant trope. You know, actually in Korean culture, even Korean mothers, they take on their children's names. It's like, oh, Eric's mom or Jesse's mom, Chuno Omma. Like, it's usually the first kid's name plus mom. So they like, it's like almost this literal loss of identity once you have children. But so I just wanted to reverse that here in the telling and to show her as herself. And it's also a big learning process for me. Working on the book really helped me to see her from a more objective perspective so I could write about her, I don't know, with nuance or with the truth.
So that was a writing tool for you? It was easier to write about Jean than to write about your mom in some way?
You know, yes. I think there is a part of that because, I don't know, for me, I need distance from something. I need time. I need to know that what I'm providing is only the tip of the iceberg because the rest is for me and my family. Because actually, my mother is very private. She's a very private person. She'd never wanted to do any of the PR for the book. And she agreed to one talk in Atlanta, which is great. It was like her, you know, because we're home and it was a lot of people we knew that would show up. But she just hates the idea of fame or anything like that. So,
well, now I feel bad because I have a bunch of questions I want to ask about her. But
no,
I'm feeling like maybe I shouldn't intrude her privacy.
No. I mean, I've written about her and she knows that I talk about her. It's more that she doesn't herself want to have to be that person. But you know what's interesting? Like, she kind of is that person in Atlanta. She's so popular in the Korean American community for her food. It's obviously really delicious, like before this book. So I don't know. We both deal with it in different ways, but I'm happy to talk about my mom. This book really is dedicated to her. And I think she secretly also likes the attention, I think.
Your mother sounds like she is fully in command in her kitchen.
Yes, surely.
So I want you, thank you for painting a picture of the kitchen and how you enter through the garage and how the garage is an extension of the kitchen. But now I want you to paint a picture of your mother in command in her kitchen where she's making, I don't know, let's say she's making Sunday supper.
Oh, man, she always has an apron on. And, you know, Sunday supper for a lot of people is like a roast chicken or a red sauce, and that's actually my Sunday supper now as an adult in my own kitchen. But my mother always puts on an apron. It usually has like cute little like cartoon figures on it. just like something from Korea. And she always fries fish. There's a lot of fish in our house. And I think it makes sense in Korean cuisine. Like, people don't really talk about that much, but there's always the fried fish smell in a good way. Like, it lets you know that dinner's happening. And there's usually rice that's sort of steaming on the side and, you know, in the rice cooker.
What kind of fish?
You know, it's usually yellow croaker. It's this very buttery, like, soft, almost salmon-like, but not quite as, like, rich. But you salt it beforehand. And the reason to do that is to get it to really soak up the seasoning. But also, it makes it not rubbery, but, like, it just firms it up slightly. So it's tender, but it's firm and also very juicy. It's hard to explain. And it's just, like, a different kind of fish that tastes so good. And it's, like, not quite dried, you know? It's not, like, a jerky. It's more, like, just the perfect. And so that's, like, a really familiar smell for me. That's, I just spent a long time talking about that fish, but that's exactly the smell of the kitchen.
Different kitchens have different personalities, and they reveal themselves often in the condiments and in the oils and the things that are all around the side. You're smiling even before I get to the question because you know where I'm going. So tell me all about that aspect of your mother's kitchen and its personality as revealed through condiments.
Man, these are great questions. Thank you so much. You just really unlocked a memory. My mom has this. My memory of my mom's cabinets were like sesame oil smell and kind of like also all over everything, all over every bottle. Like the way she cooked was, I guess, I wouldn't say messy. Like sesame oil does get everywhere. It was her olive oil. She was using it so much, but also using neutral oil. But that sesame oil is just, I didn't realize until later how Korean it was. And that was a really lovely moment in my like cooking life, because when I moved back home to write this cookbook with her, I stayed with her for 9 months. That was like my first time being back home like that in a very permanent way since I had left for college, you know? And it was one of those moments when I realized, wow, her pantry, it's quite specific actually. Specific to her, not just in general, not just Korean cooks, but to her, the sesame oil is still a thing. It's like still kind of all over everything.
And kind of sticky too.
It is a little viscous, yeah. And but not to mention she has these syrups that she loves. And then gochugaru, which is that Korean red pepper powder. And then in her other pantry, like in the fridge, which is where her kimchi fridges are and stuff like that, she has gochujang, she has doenjang, she has these changs that are kind of seasonings that underpin a lot of Korean cooking, and people call them condiments, but they're more like bases for cooking, like a sofrito or something. Mm-hmm. I sort of saw these sets of ingredients. I was like, if someone just bought these 5-6 items, then they could cook everything in the book, you know, with pantry items. And so I was hoping to just like change people's mind about what a pantry is and can be. It's like just so personal to you. And I was really trying to channel my mom when I did this book. And a lot of those ingredients are now in my pantry, of course.
So you went back home to write the book, and you were in your mother's kitchen cooking with her, observing. Does she like people in her kitchen? Because not everybody does.
I'm laughing because I feel like you know her so well. To me, the questions are like pointed in a funny way because she hates people in her kitchen.
I somehow intuited that. So.
I love that you knew that. Yes, she doesn't like people in her kitchen, but you know, sometimes I don't either. Like when I'm cooking Thanksgiving dinner, she's sort of my protector. She's like, okay, Eric needs everyone out of the kitchen. Like, stop crowding the stove. Like, we have to put out 10 dishes right now. We run as a kitchen duo pretty well. Like, but one of us is always taking lead. There's never a moment where we're equal. That doesn't work. There's always a hierarchy. So.
And is that negotiated, or do you just at this point understand who's Sue and who's lead?
Oh, I think it's honestly based on feeling. Maybe it's, we don't really discuss it, but it's always clear who's leading and who's not. Like whose dinner it is, whose dinner it isn't. So I think we just like intuit, maybe. Oh, that's really pretty. Yeah.
It's really beautiful that you have this relationship with your mom and that you can cook together and that you can live peacefully together during the pandemic when a lot of us were thrown back into our home spaces or locked down into home spaces with people that we usually only spent about 6-8
10 hours a day with, and then we were spending what felt like 36 right. hours a day, even though there were only 24 hours in a day.
Yeah.
So it's really wonderful that you have that relationship. But we should note that your relationship with your mother has been complicated.
Yeah, it has been. People gloss over that part.
Well, you don't. You begin your cookbook. Yeah. You just dive right in. I mean, in the first chapter, I think it's in the first sentence, I ran away from home.
Yeah. You know, I think it took living with her again as an adult to realize how much more nuanced our relationship could be, how it was going to be different, because for a decade, I had just been coming home for Christmas and Thanksgiving and just like saying hi and bye and leaving. And that's the joy of being a child, right? You get to come home and just relax and not be the adult anymore. But writing this book with her, spending time with her, just the day-to-day of it and like seeing her wins or maybe if she was having a good day or a bad day. It's really interesting being roommates with your mother as an adult. And, you know, I had just turned 30, I think, when I left after 9 months of like working with her on this cookbook. And I felt a real shift. I was like, wow, our relationship is different now because we've established different kinds of rules and boundaries. And I think that's lovely. It's like constantly evolving and something I'm in the process with.
Why was your relationship with your mom so complicated when you were a teenager?
Well, I think the main thing was that we were so similar, maybe. I don't know. I think that's a cop-out. But my mother and I kind of occupied a similar role in our family, and I think it was the role of people who communicate, where my brother would be hiding more of himself as he grew up and gained confidence. And I really like told them everything I was thinking at all times. So I was kind of a handful. Some of that involved just maybe rebelling a little bit, or I wasn't a bad kid, but I was doing things that were a little different than other kids.
Like what?
I don't know, something as simple as like in school, all of our friends' kids were maybe going into science and math or tech or something like that. But her kid was like this music, creative writing-y guy in literature. And but every time I would present her with like a new thing, she'd be like, oh, I didn't expect to like have a son who would want to become an English teacher or like a musician or something like that. I think with that, she would try to learn the thing. She'd be like, okay, I want to try to understand what your dream is or like what your thing is that you like right now. Because I had phases, you know. In the music phase, she was like, okay, if we're doing this, we're doing it right. We're going to get you voice lessons. We're going to like get you into Berkeley. Like she was always a very good hype man, I think. And so I think the tension came from, in a much more superficial way in the kitchen, to be honest, it was just disagreeing about how to cook certain things. But I think because we had such a strong foundation, it was not that hard to like eventually have some empathy in the kitchen towards your mother and your son to just to like listen to each other more. But we're both very stubborn, so that was a really long answer, yeah. But I think it led us back to the kitchen.
When you were a teenager, when she said, if you're going to do music, let's get you into Berkeley, let's figure out how to get you voice lessons, did you feel in some ways that she was trying to control the narrative for you rather than let you explore on your own and just figure it out?
That's interesting. My mom wasn't a momager. She wasn't like a stage mom or anything like that.
Momager. I love that
momager.
Word.
Momager. Yeah, it's a big thing. But, you know, if my mom was a momager, it was just that she learned how to drive better so that she could drive like 2 hours to, I don't know, like Valdosta, Georgia for that flute audition for state orchestra or something like random. You know, she always let me do the thing that I wanted to do. You know, she did her best to like help it along. So I look back now and I'm like, wow, that was really lovely. She showed me a model of like how to find the thing that you're good at, that you're supposed to do. And I sort of lived my life like that. And finding food writing was really random, but maybe I wouldn't have found it so easily if I didn't have my mom.
It's really nice to have someone who's in your corner, who believes in you, you know,
right.
Who is always telling you you can be what you want to be.
Yeah, but who's also really critical as well. I had this cover story about kimchi. You know, it's a big win. I don't know. I don't want to say.
Was this for?
For the New York Times. And it was this huge picture of kimchi on the cover of the food section. And I wrote this piece where I interviewed all these Korean, really amazing Korean chefs. And I happened to be in Georgia, so I picked up a copy at Publix and I like laid it out on the counter. I was like, look, kimchi's on the front page of the food section. I think she was kind of like, oh, I feel like she like criticized the photo, mostly the way the food looked. And I was like, that's a weird thing to focus on. Like I thought, you know, I was trying to share with her this nice moment in my career where I got to write about kimchi in a big way for the New York Times. But when she saw my face, because I was kind of like, wow, that's a weird thing to focus on. She was like, well, you know, like I'm not just anyone. Like it's your work. So I thought you would want my honesty because like I have taste. And she made a good point. I was like, you're right. You do have taste. And so I don't know. It was one of those things where I was like, it sounds like tough love, but it's actually more just like I like her honesty. It was really helpful during recipe development. She was just like, oh, that tastes terrible. Or like she wouldn't beat around the bush. So it's nice to have someone like that. She's very honest.
So many of us have that, gosh, mom was right moments. Like,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
She was actually right. I didn't want her to be right. This was supposed to be my thing.
Yeah. I'm starting to realize that now, luckily, like sooner than later, but she's just, I don't know. She's always right. Or at least if she's saying something that I disagree with.
Have you told her that? She's always right? Because she'd probably love to hear that.
You know, I think she knows it. She doesn't need me to say it. So yeah, I've definitely said those words to her in Korean. Yeah, because we trust each other.
In the book, it begins with an introduction. And the very first words in the very first chapter are, when I was 17 years old, I ran away from home. Okay, I'm not going to continue reading, but you're going to have to explain what happened. Why did you run away from home? You went to Nashville. Why did you run away and why did you go to Nashville?
You know, I ran away because college acceptance letters had just come in. And I went to a really competitive public high school in Georgia. And there's so much pressure. But I remember being so disappointed when I didn't get into my dream schools. And the rejection letters were already torn open on my mom's bed. Like, I walked in and I didn't even get to, like, feel that experience.
Wait, she opened the letters before you did?
Yeah, all of...
We should explain that.
She opened all of my mail. And, you know, up until then, I wasn't really getting that much mail. So, like, there wasn't a situation where she saw that as a boundary crosser because I was a kid. And she was like, I'm going to open the mail because it's going to tell us whether he got into the school that I'm going to pay for, you know? And I really understand why she opened all that mail, but we had to have a conversation about it after that. I was like, well, first I ran away because I was so angry. And I was also just really disappointed.
The sequencing of that was really interesting. We had to have a conversation, but first I ran away.
First I had to ran away. I was so young and so angry, and I was mostly projecting my anger because obviously I was just mad at myself for not getting into the schools that I wanted to get into, and I was disappointed. And I just wanted to go see my cousin in Nashville.
Which is not around the corner from Atlanta. So how did you get to Nashville?
I just drove there. I took the car.
Wait a minute. You took a car that did not have your name on the title.
No one's pressed me about this. Everyone just lets the story happen. But it was a really lovely trip. I think my mom knew what had happened. She, like, could tell. She just, like, knew me so well. She was like, oh, Eric needs to blow off steam. He's like upset about this, but he's pretending to be mad at me. And then
he's pretending to be mad at me.
She
How long did you stay away? You went to go visit your cousin in Nashville.
She worked in Nashville. Stayed over the weekend. It was a very chill weekend. But ultimately my mom did reach out to my cousin Becky, being like, is he okay? And Becky was like, I don't know what you're talking about, but let me check. And Becky played telephone and she was like, Yeah, he's fine. He's just blowing off steam. And then when I came home, she was really nice.
So what was it like? Wait a minute. You leave home, didn't tell anybody where you were going, come home. Oh, what was the reentry like?
Oh, God. I sound so spoiled. The reentry was my mom and I just had dinner. She, like, had made food, and she was like, she asked
and she
me
didn't say, boy,
trip.
Where were you? Where have you been?
she just asked you? Me, she asked me, how was your trip? And
was it dripping with sarcasm or was it I'm glad you're safe and I'm glad you're home.
Yeah, I think she was like, I'm glad you're home. It was very unspoken, but yeah, I remember getting very emotional. It was like, I just hadn't done anything until that moment, you know, like I was such a good kid. I had a really good support network, a lot of cousins around, a big brother. Like I read an online review of this book just before coming here because I was just like, I wonder what people have been saying about this. I actually don't even know. And one person had said, I loved reading about a home that I was never a part of, but I wish I was, or something like that. And I was like, whoa. I mean, it puts into perspective, and I recognize that the upbringing I had was very charmed. You know, it had its hardships, which every family does. But when I really think back on it, I'm like, wow, I was super lucky.
Coming up, Eric Kim shares the secrets of making a perfect kimchi. Stay with us. Oh, that what should we have for dinner question. That plagues all of us at one time or another. And I know that when I face that question and I haven't had time to go to the market, there's one thing that I can count on that makes life a little bit easier, and that's Home Chef. Happened to me recently. The day just stretched longer than I planned, and I didn't have time to make it to the market, didn't have time to pick up something, and I was in luck because Home Chef was already in the refrigerator. A fresh piece of salmon, lovely vegetables that went along with that, ingredients to make the sauce and the sides all in one place, all easy, just a few minutes of prep, only about 25 minutes for actually cooking the dish, and it was on the table, just like that. Voila. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. It comes with a binder that the recipes go in so you can follow step by step. The language is easy to follow. The pictures are right there, easy to follow also. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes in less than 30 minutes, or whether you want something a bit more adventurous, Home Chef can do that too. It has over 30 options every week, and it serves a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 a month on groceries, and that can add up. Home Chef even has a delicious kid-friendly family menu with 18 new options each week. If you've got a picky eater at home, I bet there's something you can still find among those 18 options. At Your Mama's Kitchen, I road test all the recipes we learn about on the show, and I also road tested Home Chef. It's worth giving it a try. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering my listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life. And of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/YMK. That's homechef.com/YMK for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. homechef.com/YMK. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. I love to be able to cook in a kitchen and have a good meal with the people I care about all around me. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen and a big island, and we were able to all get in and do our thing together and sit down in the adjoining dining room and have a long, loud meal and then clean up afterwards and continue the conversation. I loved being able to do that, and Airbnb allowed that to happen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house.
Someone could be in all of our homes as well. Hosting your home on Airbnb is a great way to make some extra money. It's very practical as a side hustle. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Have you ever owned something that inspired you to try to lift up your game? I know I just got a new tennis racket. It's one of those newfangled things that's supposed to put a little bit of extra sauce on the ball. And it makes me want to spend a little bit of extra time on the court to perfect my backhand or work on my volleys. Here's the thing. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Available dynamic sky panoramic glass roof. Available front row massaging seats. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires. Available multi-terrain select. With all of these options, you can travel in style and comfort in the city or off-road. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Well, you know, we have to talk about kimchi.
Yeah.
Well, in one reason that many people in Korean households have additional refrigerators is because of kimchi. I wonder if we should start with the refrigerators. And notice that I said refrigerator plural.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's really spot on. My mom has so many refrigerators. She has two regular size ones. One is in the basement and it sort of holds all of the more esoteric pantry ingredients that she flies over from Korea every year. So she only goes down there when she really needs to replenish her like garlic stock, for instance. And then sort of like our little like garden. And then the upstairs fridge is our regular fridge that gets swapped out with the weeknight dinners and some banchan that we eat regularly. But then she also has these two kimchi fridges and they almost look like freezer door coolers, like kind of like you're looking for ice cream at the grocery store. Anyway,
they're like the big chests that you kind of open up.
And you open up. Yeah. And then you sort of look at it like treasure. It's pretty incredible. And she has all of her kimchis in these fridges. One of them's like, you know, in the awning towards the garage. The other one is in the garage. That's like four fridges. Yeah, she has like four
fridges. Just four? But, are there any secret fridges that she has that you don't even know about?
Well, actually, they have a secret fridge in my dad's.
Oh,
in my
she does. Room. She actually does have a secret fridge. Yeah. I was a joke, it's like she actually does have a secret fridge.
No, you made me realize they have a secret fridge. They have this like mini one that they use for like their liquids. Like my dad apparently drinks so much whole milk that he needs a whole carton like in his bedroom next to his desk. It's so funny. And they keep like, I don't know, beer and like fruit and like stuff like that in there.
Now, you have to explain why she has so many refrigerators.
Each one sort of has a role in her realm of cooking. And it's just meant that her pantry has grown so much because she uses the freezer as an extension of her pantry, which is really smart.
And in the book, you say that kimchi is a verb. Explain that.
Yeah. You know, in doing the translation of Korean food for an English audience or just from Korean culture to American culture, it's interesting to see how you can borrow the language as well. And you're right, kimchi is not a verb in Korean, but it's something that I hear Korean Americans saying all the time. They're always like, oh, I'm going to kimchi this or I kimchi'd that. And that's how special it is. It's not like I'm going to preserve this, but the specificity of the kimchi is so great that you need a new word for it. And I love stuff like that. We're not leaning into the verb of kimchi enough, meaning turning a vegetable into kimchi. It's like, it's a process that's really specific, just the salting and then the seasoning and then the fermenting. But that end product, I've been making kimchi, like kale kimchi, just because I love Tuscan kale. And it's so bitter and delicious and it's really different. And I kimchi'd that kale, you know.
That sounds like you're bragging. I kimchi'd that kale.
You should brag. It's so like... much, it's kind of a lot of work.
Can we talk about the process of making kimchi? It seems absolutely. It's really simple, but it also sounds like if you mess up one of those simple steps that it could go in the wrong direction. So what are the basics of making your mother Jean's kimchi?
Yeah, I think simple is a great word. I always try to remind people that just because something takes long doesn't mean it's not simple. And it's just sort of a progression of little things you have to do. And
so wait, what do you need to begin? You need a big vat, right?
You need a big vat.
Plastic?
Plastic is great. Metal is totally fine as well. In this step, it's really just getting the salt on the kimchi and...
And you cut a cabbage in half?
You cut one napa cabbage in half, yeah. And you salt it. I like to use just regular coarse kosher salt. This is the one part that you just need to follow the recipe because you need the proportion to be right. The proportion of salt to the cabbage. And, you know, in the recipe, I do give a very specific type of salt. It's like Morton coarse kosher salt that I developed this with. And I used a different kosher salt one time when I was like, you know, doing a video, and that kimchi didn't taste as good. It like didn't come out right. The salting step is the baseline that helps you create a safe environment for probiotic production, like you're growing bacteria, but like in a safe environment so that it's only like beneficial, like good bacteria.
So no improvisation there.
No improvisation there. You know, I will weigh my vegetables just so I know that I have the right proportion of like salt to weight of a veg. And then you're just creating a sauce. And the sauce is really where you can be creative, but Jeans is just really like punchy. It's like super savory, salty, tangy from like a little fruit. She also adds pine nuts sometimes, which are really, really nice. Ginger. Mm-hmm. Some kimchis don't have as much ginger, but you just do what you like. And the sweetness in here comes from mexichong, which is the green plum syrup. And that plum syrup is a little fruitier and tartar. And what's really lovely is the sauce also gets whole vegetables. So most of the sauce is like pureed, but you also matchstick like some Korean radish, mm-hmm, and scallion and whatever vegetables you want. Some people do carrots. The more like whole vegetable that's not pureed, those let out their natural water and sort of thin out the sauce as it's pickling. That's something that I kind of like realized. There's sort of a formula, and this second step of the sauce is really where you can like have fun. Like sometimes I'll swap out the radish with beetroot, just like raw, mm-hmm, peeled, mm-hmm, matchstick beetroot, and it turns the kimchi like purple or like pink. It's really beautiful. So that's the second step. And then you just sauce the cabbage. You're just sort of like smearing the sauce in between each leaf.
So once you actually slather the sauce all over the cabbage, inside the leaves, get it all over every place, then you put it inside a jar with a very tight seal.
So it's like a plastic lid, not an airtight mason jar lid, right, because there's going to be gas in the jar that needs to get out. And that's how people's like jars explode. I don't want to scare you, but I've never had a jar of kimchi explode on me. My mom has never had it happen to her. It's like a baby. You have to burp it. You have to burp it. You know, after the first 2 days and then every like week. But this is something you'll do inherently if you're eating it, like if you need to dip into it. And then when you do it, you'll hear this almost like a bottle of Sprite. It's like, psh. That's how you know it's like doing well.
So once you have the jars of kimchi and you're checking on them and you're letting a little air out and you're burping your babies, give us an example of something that you would make with the kimchi, because the cookbook includes so many options. There's a kimchi sandwich and there's kimchi stew and there's all kinds of things that you can do with kimchi. What in particular would you recommend?
You know, I really think people should just start with kimchi jjigae. It's a kimchi stew. Jjigae means stew. And it's one of those things that you make out of the jar of kimchi that you forgot about for many, many months. And then you find it in the back and you open it. You're like, whoa, that's like rank. But you know it's going to taste incredible because the fermentation has caused like all of the savoriness to be just super deep and wonderful. That kimchi makes a really good stew. And I love this recipe because it's a very hands-off, kind of like pared-down version of my mom's kimchi jjigae. Hers is already pretty simple. Like she'll rely on the kimchi juice to provide most of the flavor of the dish. So the kimchi has to be good. But I'm also very aware of people who don't have, you know, day-old mom kimchi. So I tested it with other things and really just a little gochujang, which is like this amazing fermented chili paste, adds some savoriness and depth. And pork belly and a little onion at the end. And the things are added to the pot very gradually and sequentially. So like they're added in the order in which they need to be cooked, which means the pork starts first. But each ingredient builds a layer of kind of flavor in the ultimate broth. And it's a really different method of cooking. It's relying on that like fast burbling kind of liquid kind of heat versus in a lot of Western cooking, it's like searing it first very hard and then, you know, adding the liquid and then braising for a long time. But this takes like 10 or 15 minutes, but those 15 minutes are really optimized. That's why I love this kimchi jjigae. And when you overcook the kimchi jjigae, actually the taste, the flavors will be a little more muddled.
So you want everything to have its own distinct flavor.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a very bright version of kimchi jjigae. And the reason I picked this recipe, or I like this recipe a lot, is because the photo is a shot from behind with my mother in this amazing hanbok, just having lunch for herself. And what's funny is like, I mean, it was her lunch. She was really hungry. And
that's not a stylized photo.
I mean, her outfit is stylized, but it was just really cute watching her be like, I get to eat this? Like, this is such a fancy version of my, you know, we're trying to mimic what her lunch would look like. Anyway, I love that recipe and I love that dish. And I don't know, I hope people make it because it's a really everyday kind of dish. It's truly like Wednesday night. You can throw that together. It's so good. Just with like a, you know, a bowl of white rice, or as my mother is having it here with some burdock root tea, which actually is something she would do.
By the way, Mom has a very nice manicure in that picture. It looks like she really got her nails did that day.
She probably did. She's like attention to detail kind of person.
Is there, in your relationship with your mom, a dance that you carefully navigate in realizing that as good a cook as she is, you might become just as good a cook, maybe better?
I feel like my mom has already given me that sort of torch. I don't want it, and I don't believe it, because like I think there are things that she makes that I can't make yet. And so I've always believed that cooking is really just, it's, you know, sometimes it is kind of a muscle that you get better at the more you do it. But taste and like flavor and seasoning and ingenuity, like I think those things are kind of inherent in the person. I've like thought a lot about this. Can you learn to cook? And I do think you can learn to cook, but you can't teach taste. And my mom has taste.
I have loved talking to you about your mama's kitchen. What is it about that space that leaves an imprint on us? How was the time that you spent as a young person and then going back again on this pilgrimage to write this cookbook? How has that shaped you and the person that you've become?
It's a pretty question. I think this interview made me sort of think back on how it didn't even matter which house it was. All the kitchens were kind of the same. They were laid out the same because the person who was leading the kitchen was the same woman, you know? So my mother was the one always putting the sesame oil in the bottom left, you know, cabinet. Like, why didn't we put it in the top? Like, that's what I do now as an adult in my kitchen. But everyone has their own rhythm. It's just interesting that all of the houses bleed into each other for me because it was her domain, you know? And it takes like coming out of your mother's like kitchen domain to really figure out what your own is, because I think every individual adult can have their own if they enjoy cooking, if it's part of their life. And yeah.
I have loved talking to you.
Oh, same.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
The book is called Korean American: Food That Tastes Like Home. I've been talking to Eric Kim. Eric, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I don't know about you, but I'm going to try that kimchi and I'm going to try burping that baby. We'll see how that goes. Well, Eric's story reveals something beautiful and how relationships evolve over time, whether it's a parent, a sibling, a friend, or a coworker, maybe someone you don't feel particularly close to, someone who's gotten on your nerves. Well, that relationship always has the potential to evolve and to grow. Sometimes we need to do something a little dramatic to jumpstart that change. And I'm not advocating for running away from home to visit a cousin in the family car, but sometimes distance can provide a clearer vision and a clean slate. Eric was fortunate to have a mom like Jean who understood he needed to leave so that he could also feel the need to come back home and to share everything he learned along the way over a good home-cooked meal. If you are up for trying Eric's kimchi or kimchi jjigae at home, that's the kimchi stew, you can find the recipe at our website, yourmamaskitchen.com. And we want to hear about your experiences, so share your pictures, your kitchen tips, and your interpretations of this delicious Korean-American food. Thanks so much for listening to Your Mama's Kitchen. I'm Michelle Norris. See you soon. This has been a Higher Ground and Audible original produced by Higher Ground Studios. Senior producer Natalie Wren, producer Sonia Tun. Additional production support by Misha Jones. Sound design and engineering from Andrew Epen and Ryan Kozlowski. Higher Ground Audio's editorial assistant is Camilla Thurdikus. Executive producers for Higher Ground are Nick White, Mukta Mohan, Dan Fearman, and me, Michelle Norris. Executive producers for Audible are Nick D'Angelo and Ann Hepperman. The show's closing song is 504 by the Soul Rebels. Editorial and web support from Melissa Baer and Say What Media. Talent booker Angela Peluso. Chief Content Officer Rachel Giazza. And that's it. Goodbye, everybody. Copyright 2024 by Higher Ground Audio, LLC. Sound recording copyright 2024 by Higher Ground Audio, LLC. Have you ever owned something that inspired you to try to lift up your game? I know I just got a new tennis racket. It's one of those newfangled things that's supposed to put a little bit of extra sauce on the ball. And it makes me want to spend a little bit of extra time on the court to perfect my backhand or work on my volleys. Here's the thing. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Available dynamic sky panoramic glass roof. Available front row massaging seats. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires. Available multi-terrain select. With all of these options, you can travel in style and comfort in the city or off-road. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.